Okay. So we are holding on Lamed Dalet, Amud Beis, 8-9 lines from the bottom, Lamed and Lila. We started discussing yesterday the question of the definition of Bein HaShmoshes. We brought Braisa, where you had a three-way machlokes on it. You had the Yehuda giving simonim about what the sky looks like. We had Rav Nechemya saying that it's a half a mil, time it takes to walk a half a mil, which depending on how long, you have different proskim that talk about how long it takes to walk a mil. You have different opinions anywhere between 18 and 24 minutes. So a half a mil would be anywhere between 9 and 12 minutes. So Rav Nechemya says that after Shvia, you have that amount of time, and then it's considered night. And Rav Yossi said that Bein HaShmoshes is just like the blink of an eye, it's just like the blink of an eye between when one day goes out and the other day comes in.
Where does he take the half a mil from?
From Ezra Bain, apparently. That's how he learned from Ezra Bain, that's the shear of Bein HaShmoshes.
Where did they get it from?
I don't know. Ultimately, they got it from their Rebbe, and I don't know. We don't know. But whatever, that's Rav Nechemya's opinion. you remind me of sometimes people will look at something that it says in a mimer or a sikha or some such thing and ask, you know, where's the source for that? I mean, you know, the Rebbe himself who said the mimer is a valid source in Torah, you know? I mean, if we can find his source, so much better. But if not, if it's something that he came up with on his own, listen, you know, he's great enough to come up with it on his own. The same thing over here with Rav Nechemya. Anyway, the point is that, let's recap again.
No, but the Mishnah says you have to say something in the name of whoever said it first.
That's fine, but not always do we have that. We have that rule is broken many times in the Gemara. In particular, in Rav Nechemya's case, it might be that we just don't know. Rav Nechemya himself just said the din. In his times, I guess they knew who he was saying it over in the name of, namely his own teachers. We're not clear nowadays because we don't have biographies of the Chachamim who the Nechemya's teachers were specifically. I mean, one possibility is that his teacher was Rabbi Akiva. But whatever it is, the point is that we're told it over in the name of Rabbi Nechemya. We don't know for sure what earlier source he got it from. Anyway. Within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, we had a machlokes between Rabba and Rabbi Yosef. We said that because Rabbi Yehuda had said like this, the Braisa had said that once the sun sets, as long as Pnei Mizrach is red, and we said before that Pnei Mizrach on the surface means the eastern sky, but we'll talk about in the Gemara soon what it actually means. So as long as that's red, then the Braisa continues, when the bottom part of the sky is getting dark and the top part is not yet, then it's Bein HaShmoshes, and when they get equally dark, then it's nighttime. So we had a machlokes Rabba and Rabbi Yosef. Does it mean that the time when the sky is red is already part of Bein HaShmoshes? That's Rabba's opinion. So therefore, according to Rabba, the whole time from when the sky is red until when all of the sky is uniformly dark is Bein HaShmoshes. And according to Rabbi Yosef, while the sky is red, it's still considered daytime. Only after the redness disappears and you have the bottom part of the sky is dark and not the top, and later on all of it, only that is Bein HaShmoshes. So in other words, what we're saying is that Rabba learns there's a longer Bein HaShmoshes than Rabbi Yosef does.
On this version, it seems like it's not a blink of an eye. It's an interval of time.
Okay, in Rav Yehuda's opinion, we didn't say it was a blink of an eye. That was Rav Yossi. Let's keep the opinion straight over here. Rav Yossi was the one who said the blink of an eye. And we'll see soon what exactly that means. We mentioned yesterday that the Alter Rebbe mentioned the concept of being 2 minutes. We'll get back to that, Rav Hashem. But here we're talking within Rav Yehuda's opinion. Within Rav Yehuda's opinion, you have Rabba and Rav Yosef arguing what Rav Yehuda means is Bein HaShmoshes, the time when the sky is red as well as the time when the sky is darkening, or only the time when the sky is darkening, which is Rav Yosef, the Amora, his understanding of Rav Yehuda, the time. So this is where we're holding then, 9 lines from the bottom of Rav Dalet on the day. But all the time I do, Rabba and Rav Yosef are going according to their respective opinions where we see that Rabba holds that Bein HaShemoshes is longer than Rav Yosef says? The Itzmar, because we have a discussion as follows. Shir Bein HaShemoshes B'kama. How do we put Bein HaShemoshes in terms of an actual measurement of time? All this time, we've been talking according to Rav Yehuda. Rav Nechemiah, we had said in the Braisa, gave an amount in terms of a time, namely a half a mil. But if we're going to define Rav Yehuda's, how can we define it in terms of time? So like this, the Itmar, Shir Bein HaShemoshes B'kama, Amar Rabba, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Shloisha Chelke Mil. So Rabba says in the name of Rav Yehuda, who in turn is in the name of Shmuel, that it means three parts of a mil. Now, in other words, in effect, what he's telling us is we have a fraction of, and then fine, once we know how long it takes to walk a mil, then we can convert that into a number of minutes. But in effect, he's giving us a fraction with only the top number, only the numerator, and no bottom number, no denominator. So we have to figure out what that denominator is. My gimel chelke mil. What does he mean, two parts of a mil? Ilema tlosa palge mila. Does he mean three halves of a mil? In other words, the fraction would be 3/2. And the reason why we would think that is because we would start with the assumption that we would start with the assumption, the Ritva explained, that we would start with the assumption that Bein HaShemoshes, the suffix, is as long as possible. And the larger, I mean, you could make a fraction 3/1, of course, but then you wouldn't call it chelke at all. Then you would just call it 3 mil. So the Gemara is going to assume that the chelek over here is the largest possible chelek of a mil, namely a half, and three of those would be three halves, would be 1.5. But in that case, name a mil amechta. Why use such a convoluted way of saying it? Just say a mil and a half. El a tloth of tilse mila. So does it mean maybe the fraction is 3/3? 3/3 of a mil, can't name a mil. Then he doesn't have to mention parts at all. He can just say 1 mil. Ella, tlosa ribe mila, obviously what he must mean, therefore, by elimination, is he must mean 3/4 of a mil. Now, again, allowing for the idea that a mil, if we say a mil, is anywhere between 18 and 24 minutes, then that would come out to anywhere between, so 3/4 of an 18-minute mil would be 13 and a half minutes. 3/4 of a 24-minute mil would be 18 minutes. That remember that 18 minutes, we'll get back to that soon. So according to Rabba, the amount of Bein HaShemoshes, according to Yehuda, would be 3/4 of a mil. Next, Rav Yosef, Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Next, Rav Yosef, on the other hand, says in the name of Rav Yehuda, who says in the name of Shmuel. So both Rabba and Rav Yosef are quoting Rav Yehuda, the Amora, in the name of Shmuel, but they have different versions of what Rav Yehuda had said. Rabba has said, let's keep this straight, that he said 3/4. Rav Yosef, we're going to see in a second, and what he says, shnei chelke mil. He says 2 parts of a mil. So again, we have to ask, my shnei chelke mil, what do I mean 2 parts of a mil? Again, we have a fraction over here. We have the top number, the numerator of the fraction. We don't know the bottom one, the denominator. What is it? Ilema tre palge mila. Let's go through the same thing again. Maybe it means 2/2 of a mil. Can't lema mil. Then he doesn't have to say 2 parts, he should just say a mil. The el tre rive mila, maybe he means 2/4 of a mil, which the reason why we're skipping for a second thirds is because the Gemara would assume, okay, if it's not going to be the largest possible fraction, then he's probably using the same units as Rabba used. And we already established that Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabba is talking about quarters, that he said 3/4, so therefore maybe Rabbi Yosef also means 2/4. But no, lema chatzi mil, 2/4 of a mil equals a half a mil. So then he would say half a mil, and that would be shorter. Ela tre tilsi mil. Evidently, Rabbi Yosef means 2/3 of a mil. So with an 18-minute mil, that would be 12 minutes. With a 24-minute mil, that would mean 16 minutes. So the question is, my benayu, what is the practical, so practically speaking, how much does the difference between Rav Yosef's understanding of Bein HaShemoshes and Rabba's come out to? The answer is, ikka benayu, palga de ganga. The difference between them would be 1/2 of a sixth, meaning 1/12 of a mil. So if, let's say, if we take a 24-minute mil, for example, we're saying Rabba had said 3/4 of a mil. According to him, Bein HaShemoshes then would last 18 minutes. According to Rav Yosef, it's only 2/3, so it would last 16 minutes. So if we say that a mil is 24 minutes, and for certain purposes in halacha we do that, then it would come out that Rav Yosef, Bein HaShemoshes, is 2 minutes shorter than Rabba's. So this, in other words, this fits with what we were saying before, that Rambam makes Bein HaShemoshes to be longer because he says it also includes the time when the sky is red, whereas Rav Yosef makes it shorter because he says it doesn't include that time. By the way, pretty much all of the poskim say that the amount of time we're talking over here, this, let's say 16 or 18 minutes, is not uniform throughout the whole world. It couldn't be, really, because in different places, as you go further away from the equator, as you go further north or south, it takes longer for the sun to rise or set during most of the year. So therefore, they understand that, in other words, this is, these figures that we're giving over here in the Gemara are meant in Eretz Yisrael at the times of Nisan and Tishrei, during the equinoxes, but other times of the year in Eretz Yisrael and other places, even later in the year, all through the year, these amounts would come longer. Which is why, for example, here in New York, you're not going to say 16 or 18 minutes after Shkia is going to be when Shabbos is over. It takes a good half hour to 45 minutes after Shkia for Shabbos to be over. So it's scaled up. You have to use trigonometry. You have to use an astronomical calculation to figure out exactly how this would scale to various places in the world. Within this, also, by the way, we have what Tosfos mentioned over here, and we touched on yesterday the whole issue of Rabbi Natan's understanding of this Gemara, and there's also a Gemara in Pesachim. That there's a Gemara in Pesachim that also deals with the question of how long is there from Shkia until Tseis, and of course from Shkia until Tseis is the definition of Bein HaShemoshes, and there the Gemara gives larger figures, and in fact Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, the same Tana that we're saying over here, where Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef are explaining that he means no more than 18 minutes according to the maximum way of looking at it, In the Gemara over there, Rav Yehuda says that it's a time that it takes to walk 4 mils. So here we're saying a maximum of 3/4 mil according to Rabbah's understanding, and there he says 4 mils. So you have a few different ways of reconciling it. Many of the Rishonim learn that what it means is Rav Yehuda changed his mind. So he said, over there he says 4 mils, and then in our Gemara over here he changed his mind and said 3/4 mil, and therefore that would be more accepted halacha. Actually, the question of whether we follow Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Yossi anyway is another question. We'll get back to that soon. But assuming that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and most of the Rishonim do passing like Rabbi Yehuda, then one possibility is that Rabbi Yehuda changed his mind. Or that Rabbi Yehuda is talking over there about the kind of Tesek HaKavim where all the stars have come out. Whereas over here, he's just talking, as the Gemara is going to say soon, that you need the Tesek HaKavim for purposes of Shabbos and Yom Tov or whatever, is when only three medium stars have come out. So therefore, of course, that would be much longer when to wait until all the stars come out. On the other hand, Tosfos over here has the famous Shita of Rabbi Natan, that there's two different kinds of Shkia. That the Shkia mentioned in the Gemara over there is different than the Shkia that's talking about over here. You have Shkia when the sun first sets, and then you have Shkia of even after the sun sets, you still have light of it in the sky. And when that light disappears from the sky, that's what Benatam says, that's the Shkia that we're talking about in the Gemara over here. And from that, you count 3/4 or 2/3 or whatever of a mil to arrive at when, say, the Kachogim is. So it comes out, therefore, that according to Rabbi Natan, Shkia is much, much later than it comes out according to than the Shkia and Tesek HaKavim come out much later than the other way around. So the first opinion is you have respectable opinions on both sides of it. You have the first opinion, which is also the opinion of the Alter Rebbe and the Vilna Gaon, but earlier than them, the Alter Rebbe mentions in Seder Achnasas Shabbos, which you can find in the facts of Yurim, and also in the back of the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. The Alter Rebbe points out over there that this opinion goes all the way back at least to Rav Shura and Rav Hai Gaon, and it's held by many, many Rishonim and Achronim, that Shkia means exactly what it sounds like when the sun sets. Actually, the Alter Rebbe himself makes a slight distinction over there. He says you have there's a Shkia, which is what the Alter Rebbe calls Shkia HaNireis, the visible Shkia, which is when the light of the sun is at the top of the treetops. And then you have Shkia HaMidis, you have the true Shkia, which he says takes place 4 minutes later when the sun actually sets below the horizon. But this whole concept of that there should be, that Shkia only takes place when the sun, when the light from the sun has completely disappeared from the sky, the Alter Rebbe says nothing to it. It's clearly not like that, not only based on the opinions of various Goyim and Rishonim, but also the Alter Rebbe says, practically speaking, it's hard to understand how you could even how such an opinion even works in practice, etc. So the bottom line is the Alter Rebbe holds that the Shkia of our Gemara and the Shkia of the Gemara in Pesachim are the same thing, or maybe okay, there's a 4 minute difference between them, and then you have a 16 or 18 minutes after that, as we're saying in our Gemara over here, is Sefer Kechavim. Well, 16 or 18 minutes scaled up to the appropriate area in the world, depending on how far north or south of the equator it is. And as far as the Gemara in Pesachim, if we're gonna use it lahalacha, it is after all an agadta piece. It's not even a piece that's discussing halacha like our Gemara over here, then we're going to say it's talking about when all the stars are visible in the sky, not just three of them, as we're saying over here. But you have the opinion of Rabbi Natan. So back in Europe, you actually had communities that would follow Rabbi Natan's opinion even as far as the beginning of Shabbos. So they would begin Shabbos much, much later. And in fact, in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, you could find in Siman Reish Samach Aleph of Orach Chaim, which talks about the halacha of when to light Shabbos candles, you can find in the Shulchan Aruch on the side over there, there's a letter that the Alter Rebbe published to warn people, don't do that. Light Shabbos long before the time that Rabbi Natan says that you would have to, namely at the time where the Shkia according to the first, before Shkia according to the first definition. So eventually, as far as I know, everybody does that nowadays. I don't think anybody starts Shabbos nowadays according to Rabbi Natan's opinion. As far as ending Shabbos, fine. You're allowed to be machmir and add extra time at the end of Shabbos, but you still have to say, yeah, many communities nowadays that follow Rabbi Natan's shita as far as the end of Shabbos. But as far as I know, nobody holds by it by the beginning of Shabbos.
So according to Rabbi Natan, when do you light candles?
According to Rabbi Natan, you would be lighting candles much later than we do. We have, let's take for example this past week. This past week, candle lighting was what, 7:05? Actually, I don't know. I think my calendar is a little messed up.
We had the discussion last week. You said it's 7:13, and I said 7:05.
I know. I have a calendar in front of me, but I don't know. There may be something. Either there's something wrong with my calendar, or there's something wrong with the printed calendars. I'm not sure which. But let me. Looking at the calendar I'm looking at now, let's say for example, this past Shabbos, candle lighting was 7:05. So that means that
7:03, I think.
Whatever. Let's not quibble. 7:05, let's say. That's what I have on my calendar. So that means Shkia was 7:23. Now, according to the Alter Rebbe and according to the Gaonim and so forth, that's how it has to be. You can't light any later than 7:23. After 7:23 is Shkia. Therefore, after that begins Dein HaShemoshes. And as we said in the Mishnah, you can't do Malachas Daraisa during that time. Rabbi Natan, meanwhile, would take the view that you had, so on the calendar, on that same calendar that I'm looking at, Shabbos, it said ended at 8:14. Rabbi Natan would hold that around that time is actually when Shkia begins, or maybe a few minutes before that or whatever, is when Shkia is. Because according to him, Shkia is only when all the sun's light has disappeared from the sky. So let's say, for example, according to Rabbi Natan, it could come out that you could have lit Shabbos candles this past week close to 8 o'clock even. So again, nowadays, I don't know of anybody who does that. I don't know of anybody who says that, you have the calendars are printed with a candle lighting time, which follows the shita of the Gaonim and of the Alter Rebbe, and that's that. So I don't believe anybody nowadays does candle lighting according to Rebbe Natan's shita. But as far as ending Shabbos, that, you have people that are machmir according to Rebbe Natan's shita. There's a huge amount more discussion about this, exactly how to calculate the times of the beginning and end of Shabbos and how to calculate these various angles of the sun. One other opinion that's worth mentioning in this connection, by the way, the Sefer Yireim, which is a Sefer from one of the Balei HaTosfos, the Halacha, his understanding of this whole thing is that the amount of time we're talking about, the two-thirds of a mil, the three-quarters of a mil, or whatever, is not after Shkia, like we've been talking about all this time, but before Shkia. So according to him, in other words, Veina Shmoshes would begin that amount of time before the sun actually sets. The one possibility is, you know, we have nowadays, the almost universal minhag is that candle lighting time is 18 minutes before Shkia. Although, by the way, there are places in Eretz Yisrael where they have minhagim longer than that. In Yerushalayim, for example, the minhag is that candle lighting is 40 minutes before Shkia. But anyway, where do we get 18 minutes? One possibility is based on this. Given that the Sefer Yireim is saying that Veina Shmoshes begins before what we usually think of as Shkia, and given Rabba's opinion that it's three-quarters of a mil, which if a mil takes 24 minutes to walk, then that would be 18 minutes, then there you go. We light 18 minutes before candle lighting. Now, the Halacha obviously is not completely like the Sefer Yireim, because we know that we have those 18 minutes in which we can do Malacha if necessary, as long as we haven't accepted Shabbos, but still that could be where we get the concept of 18 minutes for candle lighting from. Okay. On top of that, by the way, with all of that, too, you have the question of who the halacha is like as far as this. Is it like Rabba or is it like Rabbi Yosef? So you have a lot of the Rishonim, beginning with the Rish, say, look, we don't know who the halacha should be like, but we know, first of all, we have to be machmir according to Rabba. Second of all, anyway, when we have a machlokas Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, generally speaking, the halacha is like Rabba. So it would mean like Rabba, so we'd say three-quarters of a mil. A couple of the Rishonim disagree with that. But Ashba mentions that his Rebbeim, for example, disagreed with that and said that no, that his Rebbeim are either the Ramban or Rabbeinu Yonah. He doesn't specify which one. But whatever, they disagreed. They said that, first of all, they said this rule that we say the halacha is like Rabba over Rabbi Yosef is only when they're arguing on svaras that they themselves have, where they're not quoting an earlier authority. Over here, they're both quoting Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel, so not necessarily would that rule apply. Still, again, because we're talking about an issue, right? So therefore we do hold, like, in general, the post to pass in like Rabba. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. So the Gemara says, b'chilufu b'chalza. This that we just said, that you have the difference between Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, where Rabba makes Veina Shmoshes to be longer, three-quarters of a mil, and Rabbi Yosef makes it to be shorter, two-thirds of a mil, you have the opposite of that machlokes when it comes to a beehive. When it comes to a large beehive that you want to move on Shabbos, so you have, there it's flipped around, where Rabba mentions two versus three, and Rabbi Yosef mentions three versus four. So they were just associating them because you have the same numbers involved. Not that the principles involved are the same, of course, because here we're talking about defining Veina Shmoshes, and here we're talking about Dinim Mokta. So the Amar Rabba, Chalsa Bastrei Kuri Shori Latatola. Rabba says that a beehive that holds two kur, you would be allowed to carry it on Shabbos. If it holds two kur, then it's not so heavy, it's not so large, that it shouldn't be considered a keli. But if it's larger than that, it's not considered a keli, and therefore you wouldn't be able to move it on Shabbos. But Rabbi Yosef, I'm about to floss the kurinami shari. Rabbi Yosef said even if it holds three kur, it's also still mutter to move. But abar kur, you know, so only if it holds four kur would it be too large to be considered a keli, and would be also to move it. By the way, in this machloka, Tosfos says the halacha is not like either one of them, because the halacha is that no matter how large a keli is, it's still considered a keli, and you could move it on Shabbos. Although, with that said, by the way, it is true that moving heavy furniture is not exactly in the spirit of Shabbos, and it's not really something that you should be doing unless, like, you have no choice, like you have to make room for people to sit or whatever. Okay. So anyway, the point is, again, that we're using the same numbers. Rabbi uses the numbers 2 and 3 as far as his version of the halacha. Rabbi Yosef uses 3 and 4, which is similar to the way we had now, with Veina Shmoshes, where Rabbi said two-thirds and Rabbi Yosef said three-quarters and Rabbi Yosef said two-thirds. So Amar Abaya mentions in this connection, actually, I once had a situation where there was an actual practical case where I had to move a large beehive or a large container like that. So I asked my Rebbe, which is Rabba, Vasu Babas Trekuri by Shonali. He didn't even allow me, even if it didn't hold two kur. So even though he said that Rabba had said that if it holds two kur, you're allowed to move it, and that if it holds two kur, you're allowed to move it. But Abaya is saying when there actually came a practical case, halacha lemaisa, that I had to ask Rabba about, he wouldn't allow me to move it even if it was smaller than that, even if it didn't hold two kur. Okay, so why not? The Gemara says, come on, who does that go like? The high Tana. That goes like the following Tana. It's now, we learn in a Mishnah, in connection with the details of Tumah V'Tahorah, you have how large, now you have like this. We know that wooden kalim are makabel tumah, but we know that wooden kalim are makabel tumah only because the Torah compares them, the Torah makes a hekesh between them and a snack. The Torah mentions a whole list of things in Parshas Shemini. So the Shabbos after next will be laying it. That's the Shem will be back in Shul by then. So the Torah mentions over there a list of items that are makabel tumah, and it mentions over there wood, and it mentions a sack. So from that we learn, from the comparison we learn, a sack is something which is sometimes carried around empty and sometimes carried around full. So for a wooden keli to be makabel tumah, it has to be the same thing. It has to be that something that you sometimes carry around empty and sometimes full. Therefore, if you have a wooden keli that is so large that you wouldn't carry it around full because it's liable to break, then it's not makabel tumah. So the Mishnah says, kavera fakash, a beehive or a basket made out of straw, the kavera fakanim, or that's made out of reeds, or bur spina alexandris, or the water tank of an Alexandrian ship. An Alexandrian ship is the kind that goes in and out of the port of Alexandria and goes all around the Mediterranean, different places all around the Mediterranean. So they're often at sea for days or weeks at a time. So they have to carry a fresh water supply because you can't drink the seawater. So therefore, so they would have on such ships, they would have a large wooden container where they would put water in it for the trip. So these kinds of things, apple fish yeshlahan shulayim, even though they have a flat bottom, but the hain machzikas never sublak shen kurayim biyavish, if they're large enough that they hold 40 sub of liquid shen kurayim biyavish, which is the equivalent of 2 kur of dry, a kur is 30 sub. So actually, a 2 kur would be 60 sub. So we're going to say in a second because solid, when you heap them up and when you put them in a container, can be heaped up. Liquids can't. The point is, to hold in such containers that hold at least 40 sub of liquids are not makabel tumah, because again, they're too heavy to be taken. They're too heavy to be carried around when they're full, but they're liable to break. So the point is, therefore, when Rabba says to Abaya, you can't carry this keli, even though it holds less than two kur, he's basing himself on this concept that once it holds 30 saw, which two kur would be 40 saw, so once it holds 30 saw of liquid, then already it's not considered a keli. And you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos. So therefore, that's why he's saying that you're not allowed to. Again, Tosfos mentions over here, and Shulchan Aruch brings that the halacha is not really like that. No matter how large a keli is, it's still considered a keli.
A kor is how many tzeah? It's 20.
A kor is 30 sa.
So it's two thirds of a, it's three fourths of a mikveh.
Two-thirds of it. Well, three-quarters of a mikveh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So depending, you have different opinions. As usual, in halacha, you have different opinions what the size of a mikveh is, ranging anywhere from about 100 to 200 gallons. So yeah, this would be three-quarters of that, so anywhere between 75 and 150 gallons of that. Okay. Omer Abaya, Abaya says, you see from that, Shema Mina, Hai Gud Shel Tzolfahav. You see from that, since the Mishnah is mentioning that this Keli, that this Keli, which is too large to be Mekabel Tumah anymore, holds 40 saw of liquid, which is the equivalent of 2 kor, which is 60 saw of solid. So you see from that, that when you're heaping up solid, like flour or whatever, in a container, then the heap up above, that sticks up above the size of the container, is one third of the total. Because that's what we're saying over here. In other words, if you have a container that's able to hold 40 saw up to the brim, you're able to then heap it up above that, and it'll hold another 20 saw. Obviously, it depends on the exact shape of the keli. So Rashi says we're talking about the kind of keli that has the proportion where the height of it is exactly half the width a round keli where the height is exactly half the diameter would be the kind of keli that would hold an extra third. Okay. Getting back now to the matter of Bein HaShemoshes, the Gemara says, Abaya Chazia the Rava Kadovi L'mayrav. Abaya one time saw Rava was gazing towards the west to see whether there's still any redness in the sky, and therefore see whether it's Bein HaShemoshes. So he was looking to the west. Amalei, Sabaya says, Valtanya called Manchepen Mizrach Magim. In the Braisa before we said, as long as the face of the east is red. Amalei, so Rava says, Misavar Pnei Mizrach Mamish. You think that Braisa means the actual eastern sky? This is your question yesterday, Avraham Moshe. That when the sun sets, it's not so much the eastern sky, it's red, it's more the western sky. No. Ponim Hamadimim Efa Mizrach. It means the side of the sky which makes the eastern sky red. In other words, the sun sets in the west, and the rays of the sun over there make redness on the western side of the sky, and you have so much of it that it also goes to the eastern sky. So therefore, you can see some redness in the eastern sky, but the main place to be looking would actually be on the western side. And in fact, we should explain that that's exactly why the Braita doesn't just say simply Mizrach according to that, is because you want to imply that the Maharam explains that you don't just want to say look toward the west in the Braita, because you want to show that it means that we're not just talking about a tiny bit of redness, we're talking about the western sky is so red that some of it reflects to the eastern sky. Still, I mean, the fact is, so then what? Still, why is Rava looking to the west? Because after all, it could be on a cloudy day, for example, you're not going to see it so clearly on the east. So then it's better to look to the west.
Why is Rava looking to the east, you mean?
No, so that's the thing. In the Gemara here, we're saying that Rava was looking to the west, and Abaya questioned him because the Braai said the east. So what we mean is, in other words, there should be enough redness in the west that it actually reflects to the east as well. Still, though, it's still better to look to the west, because it could be cloudy or whatever, and then you're not going to see it as clued in. It's definitely another version of the story is the other way around. Rava chazal Abaya because Dovi the Mizrach. According to the second version, it's the other way around. Rava saw Abaya gazing at the east. Amalei, and Rava corrects him. Mi savert pnei Mizrach mamish. You think it means the actual eastern side of the sky? No, ponim amadim in Mizrach. It means the side of the sky that illuminates the eastern side. In other words, you have to be looking to the west to see the redness over there. The simona, and a way to remember it, is kavsa, is when you have a window in a wall, the light comes in through the window and it reflects and it shines onto the opposite wall. So the same way, in other words, you have the light in one side of the sky illuminates the other side. So the redness in the west makes that the east is also a little bit red, but most of the redness is going to be on the west, so that would be the appropriate place to look. Then we said, let's continue, we said in the Braisa, we said that Rav Nechemia's definition of Bein HaShemoshes is the amount of time it takes to walk half a mil, so after Shkia. So Amar Rav Chanina, Ha-Roitza Leida Shi'ure Shor Rav Nechemya. So Rav Chanina says, if you want to know how long Rav Nechemya, if you want to know how long Rav Nechemya's, Rav Nechemya's understanding of Bein HaShemoshet is, you do like this. Yaniach Chama V'Rosh HaKarmel. You leave the sun at the top of Har HaKarmel. Har HaKarmel is a mountain in Eretz Yisrael. Nowadays, the city of Haifa is built on the side of it. It's right next to the Mediterranean. So you leave the sun at the top of the mountain. In other words, and here you have, let's learn the line in the Gemara first, and then we'll talk about the various explanations. So you leave the sun there, the Yered V'Yitro V'Yam Yala, you go down, you go and tovel in the Mediterranean, and then you come out. And by the time you come back out, Reb Nechemya's Bein HaShemoshet is over. Now, so Rashi says that all we're doing, we're just giving with that a way, a practical way of seeing how long it is, because you're not necessarily going to be walking half a mil, and they didn't have clocks or whatever in those days to know. So therefore, so Chanina is giving us a practical demonstration of how to do it.
One second, it's you walk down Har Carmel to the sea, and then you come back on the top.
And you
of
go,
Har
you
Carmel.
Go, and you go and tovel in the sea. You go and tovel. You tovel, and then you come back out, and then you come back out, back up to the top of the mountain, and by the time you're doing that, Rav Nechemya's Bein HaShemoshet is over. Now, Tosfos disagrees and says, if that's the case, why bother mentioning the toveling at all? Why would we be mentioning toveling? It must be because we want to be saying that according to Rav Nechemya, toveling at that time would still be valid in the sense that you'll still have head of Shemesh. We know that pretty much all Tmeim, at least all Tmeim on a Daraisa level, have to not only tovel on a mikveh, but they also need a hair of Shemesh. They need they need Sefer Kechavim to be completely tover. So therefore, so Tosfos says, evidently that's what the Gemara is trying to tell us over here. So what we're doing is by mentioning toveling, we want to inform the person that you should know, as long as you tovel during that time where you left, when you left the sun was at the top of Har HaKarmel, etc., then when you go down by the mountain by the most direct route and tovel, then you'll still be before Sefer Kechavim, and you'll be okay, and you'll have Heir of Shemesh. Which, if that's the case, then Tosfos says, actually, we don't just have to refer that to Rav Nechemya, we could refer that to Rav Yehuda as well. But he says that the Gemara over here may be understanding like Rav Yosef's understanding of Rav Yehuda that we said before, that Tetz Chavim begins somewhat later, and therefore you can't begin by saying when the sun is at the top of the mountain. Anyway, here also you have a good deal of discussion among Rishonim and Achronim what exactly this means. When we say that you leave the sun at the top of the mountain, first of all, there's some discussion. Do we mean, in fact, that we're talking about when we say that it goes and toggles in the sea? Do we actually mean the Mediterranean, which is next to Har HaKarmel, or do we mean the other way around? Do we mean that Rav Chanina is telling us, from the vantage point of somebody who is in Tveria, which is on the other side of Eretz Yisrael, you would see as the sun is about to set, you would see the sun at the top of Har HaKarmel, because Har HaKarmel is west of you, so you would see the sun setting over it. Then you go and tovel not in the Mediterranean, according to this explanation, but in the Kinneret, which is next to Tveria. And by the time you come out, then it'll be Tzeis HaKacharim. So in that case, that's a whole different way of defining it. Also, when we say the sun is at the top of Har HaKarmel, do we mean that you're, like Rashi said over here, that you're standing at the top of Har HaKarmel and you see the sun about to set? Or does it mean the other way around, where you're standing by the seashore and you see the sun at the top of them, and you see the rays of the sun still at the top of the mountain? So again, there's a good deal of discussion of what exactly the Gemara means over here, and that has implications, again, as far as halacha, as far as the definition of Bein HaShemoshet. In the Alter Rebbe, Seder Achnasas Shabbos, for example, he begins by talking about the idea that you have one aspect of defining Shkia is in terms of when the sun sets on the high mountains of Eretz Yisrael. That then would be Shkia HaMitis, the true Shkia, when from the vantage point of the high mountains of Eretz Yisrael the sun has set.
and one Dal Tadebe doesn't specify, but in Dayan Rashi and Siddur, for example, mentions that one of the Dal Tadebe sources is our Gemara over here about this Gemara about Harakamel. Harakamel being one of the taller mountains in Eretz Yisrael.
It takes from Har HaCarmel to the sea, it takes at least out Antevo an hour.
That depends. Nowadays, sure, because the city is built up and you have to walk down the road. But suppose that you have, in fact, the Rishonim bring over here from the Yerushalmi that says if we're talking about if you go down Har HaCarmel by the straightest possible route and you go and dip in the sea, etc., then so it still could work out. Speaking of things that you can see from a distance, Amar Akhiya, Harosa Lirus Be'era Shal Miriam, if a person wants to see the well of Miriam, so we know that the well of Miriam accompanied the Jewish people in the desert throughout the 40 years. You have the rock that Moshe Rabbeinu originally hit by Rephidim, and then it went with the Jewish people throughout the rest of the time in the desert. Later on, Moshe Rabbeinu hit it again, of course, and lost his chance to go into Israel. Anyway, after the Jewish people entered Eretz Yisrael, they didn't need the Be'er Shel Miriam anymore. So then it was put away. So the Gemara says, Yalo the Rosh HaKarmel. Similarly, you go up to the top of Carmel, the Yitzeh, and you gaze the Yirek Min Kvar Bayam. You will see something in the sea that looks like a sieve, like something that has a lot of holes in it. The Zui Be'er Shel Miriam, that would be the Be'er Shel Miriam. That's where it was placed. And again, does the Yam over here mean the Mediterranean? Not necessarily, actually. There's a Rashi in Parshas Chukah, based on the pasuk over there, that says that it actually refers to the Kinneret. Anyway, it's brought by the way that the Arizal gave some of the water from Be'er Shel Miriam to Reb Chaim Vital to drink, and that's how Reb Chaim Vital became so great and became the primary Talmud of the Arizal and the one who wrote down the most reliable version of his teachings. Was from drinking Be'er Shel Miriam. The Ramal also brings, by the way, an interesting thing, that it's good to draw water and drink water on Motzei Shabbos. So he says, he brings an idea that it comes from the Kolboy, that says that every Motzei Shabbos, Be'er Shel Miriam travels around, and sometimes you may get lucky, and your local water supply that week may have some of the water of Be'er Shel Miriam in it, and it's good for curing whatever ails the person. Omer Rav, in this connection, Rav says, Mayan Hamitaltel Torah, a movable spring is Torah. Now, a spring of water usually is not movable, because it usually comes out of the ground. But if you have a movable spring, then it's Torah, if the water in it is not Makabel Truma, and you would be allowed to tovel in the water of it. The Zehu Be'er Shel Miriam, specifically, that refers to the well of Miriam, because there is no other Mayan of a Tautel in history. You always have a Mayan and a spring of water that comes from the ground. But the one unique Mayan of a Tautel in history is the Be'er Shel Miriam, and therefore, in other words, that explains, for example, how the Jewish people, how anybody who needed a tovel, anybody who became Tomei, during all the 40 years in the desert, how were they able to tovel? They don't have water. They don't have water available in the desert, but they do. They could use the water from Be'er Shel Miriam, even though it's movable. It's still that. It's considered like a spring that's attached to the ground, and it's not Makabel Chava. There's an interesting idea that the Roga Chava says one explanation of why Moshe was punished for hitting the rock in that case, and he explains because if the idea is based on what we're saying over here in the Gemara, that the Be'er Shel Miriam, that the water of it you could tovel in, but that only works in general. A mikvah has to be not made, a mikvah has to be that the water came there not by human agency. If it doesn't, the mikvah is possible. So when Moshe spoke to the rock, then the water that came out of it would still be Torah, but because he struck it instead, because he hit it, therefore, the Roga Chava learns, that it was made by human agency, and therefore the water of it was not kosher to tovel it anymore. Let's talk more about this matter of toveling, where then you need head of Shemesh. During the Dena Shmoshes of Rabbi Yehuda, the Kohenim are still able to tovel. They need a head of Shemesh, but on the face of it, what he's saying is that only at the end of Dena Shmoshes is it going to be nighttime. So question is Laman. According to which opinion would that be? Elamer of Yehuda, are you saying according to Yehuda, himself, you would be allowed to Togel doing his understanding of Bein HaShemoshes, and it would still be good because you have a head of Shemesh? Can you? The whole point is, we've been saying Bein HaShemoshes is a Sophist. So how could you say that you can Togel during Bein HaShemoshes and it's valid? What if Bein HaShemoshes is actually considered part of the nighttime already, as we said before, is one of the three possibilities, and then it turns out you Togel after nightfall, and then Head of Shemesh is only going to be the next day? Ela Bein HaShemoshes is of Yehuda.
Erev Shemesh is within Bein HaShemoshes?
No. What we're saying is Head of Shemesh means nightfall. But again, we've said that Bein HaShemoshes is a suffix, right? There's a three-way suffix. Bein HaShemoshes could be all part of the day, all part of the night, or part of Bein HaShemoshes itself is part of the day and part is part of the night. So the problem is that if we say that Bein HaShemoshes is a suffix, then how can you say that it might already be part of the night? Then how could you say that Kohenim and Tovel doing it and having Tovel, then they're going to have Head of Shemesh a few minutes later and they're good? Not necessarily. It might be, actually, by the time they Tovel, that Bidul from Bein HaShemoshes already is considered night, Wahalacha, and therefore then it's too late. They already missed Head of Shemesh for tonight, and they're going to have to wait for Head of Shemesh tomorrow night. So that doesn't work. So Ella, does it mean Bein HaShemoshes did of Yehuda lit of Yosi Kohenim Tovel? So okay, maybe what you mean is that during Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of Bein HaShemoshes, Rabbi Yosi would say the Kohenim can still Tovel, because according to Rabbi Yosi, it's not yet Bein HaShemoshes, because we said before Rabbi Yosi said that Bein HaShemoshes is Keherif Ayin. So the question is Pshita. Well, wouldn't that be obvious? Isn't it obvious that Rabbi Yosi's Keherif Ayin is after Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemoshes? So therefore, obviously, Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemoshes, Rabbi Yosi would still consider to be daytime, so of course you could Tovel during then. The answer is no. Maudetema, if you didn't have Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel telling us otherwise, you would have thought Bein HaShemoshes did Rabbi Yosi Meshach Shayach with Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe not. Maybe Rabbi Yosi's Bein HaShemoshes is actually part of Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemoshes. In other words, maybe we would say that Rabbi Yehuda is fine. Rabbi Yehuda has a longer definition of Bein HaShemoshes. Rabbi Yosi has a shorter one. But they would both agree that it ends at the same time. And therefore, if you were to Tovel during Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemoshes, then not necessarily would you make it in time, even according to Rabbi Yosi. Kamash Malan, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, the Amora, wants to tell us that no, Gesholim Bein HaShemoshes did Rabbi Yehuda, but Hodur Maskel Bein HaShemoshes did Rabbi Yosi. First Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemoshes ends, then Rabbi Yosi's Bein HaShemoshes begins. So therefore, in other words, when it comes the end of Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of Bein HaShemoshes, according to Rabbi Yosi, only then is it beginning Bein HaShemoshes. Therefore, no problem. You can Tovel during Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemoshes, and according to Rabbi Yosi, you're still during the daytime. Now, Tosfos on the days explains that actually, we don't mean that Rabbi Yosi's Bein HaShemoshes begins immediately, the second after Yehuda's ends, because then you don't have time for Tovel and either. So you evidently there needs to be an amount of time between them, the amount of time that it takes to Tovel. Now, how long does it take to Tovel? Tosfos brings on the basis of a concept in the Halachos of a Zov, that it implies over there that the amount of time that it takes 50 that takes to walk 50 amos is the time that it takes to Tovel. So therefore, Tosfos says, okay, if we're talking over here, there has to be actually just less than the amount of time to Tovel. So therefore, it would be the time that it takes to walk 49 amos. So again, 49 amos is a little less than 1/40th of a mil. So again, depending on how you define the length of a mil in terms of how long it takes to walk it, it's going to come out to less than a minute. So in other words, according to Tosfos, what we're saying is you have Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemoshes, then that ends. Within a minute after that begins Rabbi Yosi's Bein HaShemoshes, and it lasts for Keherif Ayin. Now, so that actually in Seder Achnasas Shabbos says that Rabbi Yosi's Bein HaShemoshes lasts 2 minutes. So one idea, where did the Alpha get 2 minutes? So one possibility is that the altidebra means you have the half a minute or so, or the three quarters of a minute that Tosfos is implying, the time it takes to walk 49 amos, plus you have a little longer, and therefore the total of 2 minutes from the beginning, from the end of Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemashos until the end of Rabbi Yehuda. Another possibility, Yosef Keller brings up a possibility that what it is we're going to mention soon about how the different stars appear in general from when one star appears in the sky until the next one at the beginning of the night takes about 2 minutes. Because it takes about 2 minutes for the sky to get dark enough for another star to appear. So therefore, that could be where the Alphabet is getting the 2 minutes for Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. Who is the halacha like? Amar Rabba Bachana, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Halacha Kerav Yehuda. In Shabbos, the halacha Kerav Yehuda in Truma. We have to be machmer both ways. When it comes to Shabbos, we're machmer like Rabbi Yehuda, and we say Shabbos doesn't end that it means as far as the beginning of Shabbos. It means that once we said in the Mishnah that during Bein HaShemashos there are certain malachas d'rabbanan, that you still there are certain things that are also d'rabbanan on Shabbos that you're still allowed to do. But we're saying Rabbi Yehuda is more machner than Rabbi Yehuda, because we said Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemashos ends before Rabbi Yehuda starts. So the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, as far as the beginning of Shabbos, once Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemashos is over, you can't do any of those things. On the other hand, the halacha is like a Yosi regarding truma, that the kohenim are still able to toggle during a Yosi Bein HaShemashos, and then they have to wait until the end of during Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemashos, and then they have to end for, then they have to wait for the end of Rabbi Yosi Bein HaShemashos, and then they can eat truma. So that's the Gemara asks. The Shlema halacha for Rabbi Yehuda in Shabbos. I can understand when we say the halacha is Rabbi Yehuda as far as Shabbos l'chumra. That means that we're going l'chumra and we're saying that Shabbos, that we're saying that Bein HaShemashos ends earlier than it otherwise might. So once the end of Bein HaShemashos comes, then you're not allowed to do anything at all. That's even things that are also only d'rabbanan. Aval in truma, ma'i. But what do you mean when you say the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi regarding truma? You have two different parts. You have when they're allowed to travel and when they're allowed to eat. Ilema l'tzvila, do you mean that he's saying, as we said before, according to Rav Yehuda the Amora, that you're allowed to still tovel during Rav Yehuda's Bein HaShemashos, and you'll still be able to have head of Shemesh, according to Rav Yehuda? Okay, faking, it's still a suffix, because we're saying that halacha may be like Rav Yehuda. So it can't mean that you should be allowed to tovel during Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemashos, and you would still be okay as far as head of Shemesh. Ella, no. What he means is la'achilas truma. He means as far as eating truma. The kohenim, the lo achli kohenim truma ad b'sholim Bein HaShemashos. The kohenim are not allowed to eat truma if they tovel the needed head of Shemesh until Bein HaShemashos, Abdi Shalom Bein HaShemashos, did Rabbi Yosi, until Rabbi Yosi, Bein HaShemashos is over, because that's the latest possible time that we could define as, that they've had head of Shemesh and now they're Tahor and they're able to eat Shurama. So in other words, that's what we're saying. So in other words, again, let's keep our definition straight. You have Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemashos, a short time after that, about a half a minute or two-thirds of a minute later, according to Tosfos, the time it takes to walk 49 amos, begins Rabbi Yosi's Bein HaShemashos, and lasts for a very short amount of time, about 2 minutes, according to the Alphabet. So what we're saying is like this. As far as Shabbos, as far as determining when you're not allowed to do any malachas d'rabbanan anymore, such as we said in the Mishnah, let's say putting down an Eruv Tchumen, that that you would have to follow Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. You're not allowed to follow Rabbi Yosi's opinion and say, okay, but I have an extra 2 minutes. When it comes to the kohenim toveling for truma, same thing. You have to make sure that you tovel before Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemashos begins, because otherwise you may already be toveling at night and you've missed head of Shemesh for tonight. But when it comes to when you actually eat truma, then you have to wait the full amount of time of Rabbi Yehuda's Bein HaShemashos and Rabbi Yosi's Bein HaShemashos, and only then are you able to eat truma. But then for sure you've had a head of Shemesh.
Which version of Rabbi Yehuda?
But within that, you have the machlokes rishonim that I touched on before, where you have, is the halacha like Rabba, or is it like Rabbi Yosef? We said the Rif passed in the Rif, and most other rishonim following him passed in like Rabbi Yehuda, because it's like Rabba, rather, because it comes out of Chumrah, it comes out a longer amount of time for Bein HaShemashos, between it comes out a longer time for Bein HaShemashos, 3/4 of a mil, we said, which 3/4 of a mil, depending on what you say the length of a mil is going to be anywhere between 13 and a half and 18 minutes. Versus, you have the Rashbam mentions that there are Rishonim, such as Rabbeinu Yonah, who say that no, the halacha actually can be like Rabbi Yosef, and you have a shorter Bein HaShemashos, 2/3 of a mil, which would be anywhere between 12 and 16 minutes. But most of the poskim say that when we say in the Gemara over here, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. As far as Shabbos, most of them say we mean Rabbah's version of Rabbi Yehuda.
And Rabbah's version is 3/4?
Rabbah's version is 3/4, which again, we scale up depending on where you are in the world. As you go further away from the equator, that amount of time is going to get longer. So for example, the Alter Rebbe mentions in Seder Achnasa Shabbos that in his area of the world, he lived in Lozna and Ladi, which are about 55 degrees north of the equator. So he says in his area, therefore, it comes out that Seis Chachavim is approximately half an hour after, that is approximately half an hour after Shkia during at the time of the equinox. It's 34 minutes after Shkia Niris, after the visible Shkia, and 30 minutes after Shkia Niris, he says. And then different other places in the world, it would be scaled accordingly. You do actually, it's worth mentioning, by the way, I mean, the general minhag here in America and in many places in the world is to consider a little longer than that. I believe Moshe, for example, held by the idea that you should do at least 50 minutes after Shia. So practically speaking, when you look on the calendar and you see what time they say Shabbos is over, it generally follows that opinion. They once asked the Rebbe about it, and he said maybe it's not so strictly necessary. And in fact, you know, unfortunately now we have to talk about label Groner as all of a shalom, but he reports, the Dain Raskin mentions in his Siddur report that Rabbi Groner, all of a shalom, mentioned that there were times when Shabbos was over when the Rebbe would daven Ma'ariv, only about a half hour or so after Shia, a little bit less than half an hour after Shia, because technically this idea that you have to wait 50 minutes after Shia, which you find on the calendar, is not necessarily necessary according to the Alberta.
And that's why after a fast they daven Ma'ariv earlier?
Exactly. So when it comes to a fast, since a fast is only the Rabbanon, then we can be Makel, and then we follow that. When it comes to Shabbos, because Shabbos is Baraisa, so we try to be Machmir, and therefore we generally follow that Shitta 50 minutes.
50 minutes after what?
Well, in New York, we're talking about 50 minutes after Shia. So if you look on a calendar, you'll generally find that the time that it says that Shabbos is over comes out about 50 minutes after Shkia. So it comes out there an hour and 8 minutes after Lichten, about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go on. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, we're going to give another definition of Bein HaShemashos. Choychav Echad, when you see one star in the sky, Yoim, then it's still daytime. One star over here for this purpose can also mean a planet, because the actual stars themselves, you're not going to see during the daytime, but we mean it can mean also one of the planets. Shnayim Bein HaShemashos, when you see two stars, then it's Bein HaShemashos. Shlosha Laila, when you see three stars, then it's nighttime already. Kanyinami Hochevi, going like that in the Braisa, Kochavechad Yoim, Shnayim Bein HaShemashos, Shlosha Laila. Now, how does this relate to all the definitions that we were talking about before? The one thing is, that one answer is that in fact it is the same definition of as the previous one, but for example Rabbi Yehuda had talked about in terms of how light or how dark the sky is, when the top part of the sky is equal the darkness to the bottom part. Not everybody is so expert to be able to tell, is it actually the same color or is it slightly different? Not everybody has that sense of being able to tell that the color is so clearly. So therefore, instead, the Gemara wants to give us more of an unambiguous definition, stars anybody can look in the sky and see. Amar Rav Yosi, so Rav Yosi says, you should know we have to define our terms a little carefully when we say stars. We're not talking about the kind of large stars that you can see even during the daytime sometimes. We don't mean the smallest stars that you can see only at night. We mean the average stars. the Alter Rebbe mentions in Seder Achnas Shabbos, based on earlier Rishonim, that we don't mean over here. We don't mean over here the size of the stars in terms of how large they look to us, but how large they actually are. So again, how exactly you calculate that is a little bit complicated. To have a huge amount of ink has been spilt on this, on figuring out exactly at what point that you have. For example, there was a guy, Yehuda Levy, who many years ago published a paper on this topic, where he actually went and did experiments and looked at tables and whatever and all kinds of things in order to figure out how long after Shkia can you start seeing stars or planets in the sky. Obviously not in a place like New York City, but a place out in the middle of nowhere where there's no light to block it. One thing he finds from his experiments over there is, again, that it takes about 2 minutes between when one star appears and where the next one does. And that's, like I was saying before, Yossel Keller wants to say maybe that's where the Alter Rebbe gets the definition that according to the Yossi, there's 2 minutes, that Ben Hashmash is last 2 minutes. Again, for purposes of practical halacha, it mentions in Shulchan Aruch that we should be machmir and say that when three small stars are visible in the sky, because we're not exactly experts at figuring out what are large stars and what are medium and what are small ones. So technically, it should be medium ones, that three of them is already considered nighttime and Shabbos would be over, but we don't have that kind of expertise, so therefore we better look for three small ones. In this connection, what happens if a person does malacha on two Ben HaShemoshes consecutively? So let's say, for example, he does malacha on Friday, Ben HaShemoshes, and then he does also on Motzei Shabbos, also Ben HaShemoshes, and Rashi says it was all Behel Mechad, so you don't have, if it had been only one of them, you'd be bringing an Oshem Tolerim. Because he'd be bringing an Oshem Tolerim, because he's not sure whether he did Malacha on Shabbos or not. But like this, where he did it on Friday, Ben HaShemoshes, and on Shabbos, Ben HaShemoshes, then for sure he's Chayav Chatzos Memonasha. However you look at it, he's going to be Chayav Chatzos. Because one way or the other, as long as, now it would have to be, Rashi says, where he did the Malacha throughout the Ben HaShemoshes. Otherwise, again, you have the possibility we said before, maybe part of Ben HaShemoshes is part of the day and part of it is part of the night. But if he did malacha throughout the entire Ben HaShemoshes on Friday, and also throughout the entire Ben HaShemoshes on Shabbos, then no matter how you slice it, he's obviously done malacha on Shabbos at some point. Therefore, he's going to be chayav chatzos. Amalei Rava L'shamei, in this connection, Rava says to his servant, Afterun delekim l'chol b'shi'ura d'rabbanan, you who are not so expert in the shiurim that the Chachamim said of how long Ben HaShemoshes last, or of how dark the sky is exactly, that you're gonna know the exact definition when it's Ben HaShemoshes. So what you should do is add the shimsha b'reish dikli, when the sun is at the top of the trees, iflu shraga is when you should be lighting the Shabbos candles. And again, does he mean when the sun itself, the actual sun is visible at the tops of the trees? Does he just mean when the sunlight is visible at the top of the trees? There's further discussions about that as well. From the Alter Rebbe's discussion in Seder Hilchos Shabbos, it seems that he means the light. When the light is visible still above the trees is when you should be lighting the Shabbos candles, because Shia is going to be shortly after that. So the question is, what do you do on a cloudy day when you can't see the sunlight? So then, like this, Masa, if you're in the city, look at what the chickens do. The chickens, the roosters, when it's getting late in the day and the sun is about to set, they go and start sitting on beams. Throughout the daytime, in other words, they're on the ground, pecking around on the ground or whatever. But when it comes evening, they have their own body clocks, where they realize that the sun is about to set, and they go and start perching on beams or whatever where they're going to sleep away the night. So therefore, when you see them going up onto the beams and perching, then you know that it's almost sunset. But Davra, if you're out in the field, Irvi, you can look at what the ravens do. Same kind of thing. When it comes here, then they go and start perching on the trees. Inami Adon, or another possibility is you can look out in the fields for a plant called Adoni. In English, it's called mallow. The leaves of it, and the leaves of a number of plants are like this, but a mallow, I guess, is particularly noticeable. In the morning, the leaves point toward the east. In the middle of the day, they're straight up, and towards the evening, they're turned very strongly toward the west. So when you see that the mallow plant's leaves are pointing west, then you know that it's Shia.
Okay.
Most sorts of Tananabon, we learn in a bride, the sheisht kiyas token erev Shabbos. So on erev Shabbos, they would blow six kiyas. So nowadays we have the siren tellers that are called Shabbos. In those days they would blow a shofar for that purpose. When we say kiyas over here, we don't mean just kiyas, long notes. We mean a combination of kiyas and truas. Like we do on Rosh Hashanah, kiyas, truas, kiyas, etc. As we're going to see in a second. So nowadays in many places they have sirens, but I mean nowadays we have calendars and we have watches anyway. So they would blow these kiyas. Rishona lahavdil la'amim melachos shabbos. The first of those six kiyas was the first of those six kiyas was meant to tell the people to stop working in the fields. Shnia lahavdil here. The second one was meant to tell people in the city to stop working. Lahavdil here lachanuyas, to the people in the city to stop working and the stores to close. So shlishis lahavdil to send there. And the third one would be telling people it's time to light candles. Dibur Reb Nosson. That's how Reb Nosson understands what they were meant for. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi says no. Shlishis lachos tefillin. The third one is not yet the lighting Shabbos candle. The third one is to tell people to take off tefillin. Of course, this is in the times when people would wear tefillin all day long. The shohet to get shlishis dog kosin. Then at that point, he waits between that and the next tier, the amount of time that it would take to roast a small fish, or the amount of time that it would take to stick a loaf of bread in the oven and have enough of it baked before Shabbos that it would be allowed. As we learned in the first parak, you're not allowed to bake bread right before Shabbos unless there's enough time before Shabbos for it to get baked at least to a certain extent. That you would wait that amount of time, the amount of time it takes to roast a small fish or to put a loaf of bread in the oven and have it start baking. And then then he would blow a tekeo through a tekeo, the shoveis, and then he would stop, and that's it. Shabbos had begun. Omer of Shimon Gamil, Rav Shimon Gamil says in this connection, Ma nasa lahem al-Bavliyim, what are we supposed to do about the Bavliyim? The Bavliyim do the sound out of order. They do the sound out of order. They do a tkia and a tshuva, the shoves in the tosh marin. And then, as they're doing the tshuva, is the time to begin Shabbos. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? In that case, what do you mean? Token of marin, abalu chamisha. We said there's supposed to be six blasts of the shofar. Like this, according to what Shimon and Leo are saying, in Babel they're doing only five. They're doing tkia, tshuva, tkia for the first three that we said to tell people in the fields and in the cities to stop working and then to light candles or take off tefillin. And then they're doing only two more, tkia and tshuva. Elo, no. What he means is shetoken, because you're the token, umarian, what he means is the last set they would do, instead of doing tkia, then tshuva, then tkia, instead the last set they're doing tkia, and then another tkia, and then a tshuva. The shows in the first meridian, and then they're saying that when the tshuva is blown is when Shabbos begins. So why are they doing that? So Rav Shimon Gamliel says, really, we should do something about that. They're doing it wrong. But he says, meaning of it, saying, yeah, then, okay, that's the minute they have from their ancestors, so we're not going to interfere with it. So the Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, Taka, why did they do it differently in Babel? Because, like this, in case people didn't hear the first tier, they might when they hear the second one, they were concerned what if people think it's the first one. So like this, by having the true at the end, that way it would be very clear when Shabbos begins. Okay. Anyway, the point is, we have so far the six, and we have a machloket which of nothing and of Yehuda Hanasi. What the third one was meant to tell people to do? Was it meant to tell people to light candles, or was it meant to tell people to take off tefillin? In which case, according to Rebbe, the time for lighting the Shabbos candles would be when they do the fourth one. An interesting thing in that connection, by the way, is we're saying over here that he would wait long enough for them to roast the fish or whatever. If we go according to Rebbe, and further in the Gemara, we're going to quote another Braisa in this connection, then it comes out you're allowed to do Malacha after the Shabbos candles have been lit. Now, is that in fact so? Are you allowed to still do Malacha after Shabbos candles are lit? You have a Machlokas Rishonim about that. You have the Ran in particular says, absolutely not. What does it mean over here that they would wait that amount of time? This means they would wait that amount of time, not that you could actually do malacha during that time. On the other hand, many others are showing and learning that you can. Just because you lit Shabbos candles doesn't automatically mean you accepted Shabbos. The Ramah writes, and this is how we do it, is that the general way it works is women, when they light Shabbos candles, are assumed to be already accepting Shabbos of that, unless they make a t'nai to the contrary. So a woman can, when a woman lights Shabbos candles, she has in mind the fact to accept Shabbos. And that means, in other words, for example, she's not allowed to put the match out afterwards, which is why we have, by the way, that's why the minhag developed, based on actually, this is one of those interesting things in halacha where you have the wife of the mother of one of the hachamim is somebody who established halacha. I think it's either the mother or the wife, I don't remember, of the smith who argued that you have to have, therefore, in order to be able to put out the match or whatever you lit the Shabbos candles with, you have to cover your eyes to light Shabbos candles, and then only afterwards, then you put out the match, so then it's considered in effect you haven't lit Shabbos candles yet because you haven't had hanah from them. Then you put out the match, then you make the bracha, then you uncover your eyes, and only then is it considered that you lit Shabbos candles and accepted Shabbos. And this chiddush of the smez wife became accepted, and this is how women do it when they light Shabbos candles. And on the other hand, with men, you don't have that. A man who lights Shabbos candles is not assumed to be accepting Shabbos for that. Okay. Anyway, let's go on.
Does he have to have it in mind not to accept Shabbos, or not necessarily?
No. The assumption is that a man is not accepting Shabbos when he lights Shabbos candles. This concept that we're accepting Shabbos by lighting the candles applies only to women. It doesn't apply to men. Yes. Okay. Maskele Rav Yehuda Rav Yitzchak Brei, Rav Yehuda taught the bride that Rav Yitzchak, his son, saying Shnia Lahamikafanir. So far, again, we had Rav Nosson's opinion that that you light candles when they're blowing the shofar for the third time. Rav Yehuda Hanasi saying it's the fourth time. So now, though, Rav Yehuda, the Amora, is teaching his son Rav Yitzchak that you do it at the second one. So the question is, Gemara, who is that like Rav Nosson or like Rav Yehuda Hanasi? That doesn't work according to either of the Tanoi, we said before. El Shlishis Lahamikafanir. No, we have to say what he taught him was the third one is the time to light the candle, Kiman Kirav Nosson, and that would be like what Rav Nosson says. So the Gemara says, Tanan Vei Rabbi Shmuel. We learn in a Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel a little more detail about these six tkiyas. Sheish tkiyas token Erev Shabbos. They blow three tkiyas, meaning three sounds on Erev Shabbos. So it goes like this. Hischilus Kayas Tkiya Rishona. As soon as he starts blowing the first blast on the shofar, then everybody who is in the field stops digging and plowing or doing any other kind of work in the field. That's the first tier is a signal for them to stop that work. They don't yet come into the city yet. They ain't a curving or showingly comes. The closer people, the people who are working in fields closer to the city, are not allowed to come into the city yet. Until the people who are further away come, and then they'll all go in together. Otherwise, people in the city don't know where various people work in the fields. So if you don't do that, if people come in different groups, people are going to suspect the ones that come in later that they were working after the time, that they were working after that first blast of the shofar. So to avoid that problem, everybody comes in together. Then the Adayim Chanuyas Tzokos Tristan Monachim. Meanwhile, though, in the city, the stores are still open and the window shutters are still laid out over there. What they used to do is they would take the window shutters, and then in the morning when they opened up the store, they would take the window shutters and put them down and use them as a counter. So those are still there. Those are still there after the first Pita. The stores are still allowed to be open. Then when he starts blowing the second blast to the shofar, which already is a teruah, not a tkiya, but whatever, at that point they have to pick up the window shutters and put them in and then stop the stores are closed. You still are allowed to have hot water on the stove to be able to use on Shabbos to mix with your wine. And pots of food for Shabbos are still on the stove also. Once he starts blowing the third tkiya, then anybody who's going to be taking off their food from the stove for Friday night does that now. Meaning, in other words, you have, let's say, for example, food that you're going to be eating Friday night. It's not necessary to keep it so hot because from the time that you finish cooking it right before Shabbos until you eat it is not going to be that long. So therefore, they would just take it off the fire. So anybody who's going to do that does that. The hitman amakmin, anybody who wants to insulate their food, which they're going to be eating tomorrow, now is the time to do it, to wrap it up in towels or cloth or wool shearings or whatever, as we're going to learn about in the fourth letter. The hidlik amadlik, anybody who needs to light Shabbos candles, light Shabbos candles. The shoyak is a tzliyak dog cotton. Then again, the guy waits over there. The amount of time it takes to roast a small fish, or the amount of time that it takes to stick bread into the oven and have it start baking. It's a keo maria, but it's a keo, shavit, then he blows another tkiya through a tkiya, and that's it, Shabbos has begun. So that's the definition of the six tkiyas, and we're going to talk about is there a possibility. We're going to finish off in the Gemara. We'll next learn on Motzei Shabbos, Be'ez Hashem. We'll talk about the possibilities. Is there maybe any little bit more leeway after that to still be doing Malacha? We'll deal with that tomorrow, and we'll finish off the Perek, and we'll start the third Perek or on Motzei Shabbos, Be'ez Hashem.
Tomorrow?
No, not tomorrow. Motzei Shabbos.
You said tomorrow.